We ask no more questions that others don't dare. We're dead on the air. We're back, we're dead on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air this Tuesday morning, the 9th of March 2010. It's a bright, sunny day in Sydney. And today on the show, we'll be speaking to Warwick Marsh from Dads for Kids, the Fatherhood Foundation. And Warwick's going to be talking to us about a meeting that's scheduled in Canberra this Friday, a very important meeting to discuss the proposed rollback of the Howard government legislation on parenting. Later on, we'll be talking to Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency. Sue gives us a regular update on various developments, and she's running a couple of campaigns that I'm sure she'll be delighted to tell us about. And to let you know what's coming up, there was an article on Sunday, March the 7th, by Andrew Bolt, talking about an explosion in online romances, which is making some difficult family court decisions because with the parents living in different places, there are now even more relocation disputes, so that now there's an average distance of 1,646 kilometres between children and the parent left behind. Now, there's been a study done by the University of Sydney, and they've been following 40 men and 40 women in 71 relocation cases since 2006. Now, one of the researchers, Judy Single, has agreed to come on the show, so we'll be talking to her in the next week or so, and we'll get it straight from the horse's mouth what those findings have been. So, in the meantime, we'll start with some news stories. I should say, we haven't even introduced ourselves in the studio. It's Bill Cable from Mediate Now, that's me, and with me is Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning, listeners and everybody out there in the world. Great to be here.
Now, Ian, have you got something in the news for us?
Well, that last little event that you were talking about leads quite nicely into this, rather seamlessly. An article in this morning's Australian by Caroline Overington, who we all know is generally not favourable to the fatherhood movement. However, she writes under the heading, Family Law Unable to Back Mum on New Life. A child's right to a meaningful relationship with his or her father trumps a woman's right to pursue personal happiness after divorce, according to the latest ruling on the matter by a family court magistrate. In a judgment handed down in Melbourne, Federal Magistrate Evelyn Bender acknowledged that some women feel compelled to start fresh after divorce by leaving town with the children. Until recently, they had mostly been allowed to go their way on the grounds that happy mothers meant happy children. However, the shared parenting law brought in by the Howard government in 2006 shifted the pendulum towards a children's right to have the father involved in all aspects of life, including weekday meals, weekend sports, overnight stays, and parent-teacher nights, a position that we here at Dads on the Air overwhelmingly support and actually think that the Howard government didn't go far enough, only bringing in the notion of shared responsibility as opposed to equal shared or presumption of equal shared parenting time that we believe is in the best interests of children. Now, Caroline Overington points out that the shared parenting review is subject, the shared parenting law is subject to a Rudd government review. And she goes on to say that in the most recent case, known as Barkman and Barkman, the wife, aged 25, tried to get permission to move to a town 100 kilometres away from the home she had shared with her former husband, taking their sons, aged 6 and 2, with her. The court banned the move, saying the woman could not move beyond a 30 to 40 kilometre radius of her former husband's home with the children, now, which I think is a very reasonable decision. Unfortunately, in this case, the husband, he did the wrong thing. The article goes on to say the couple had separated after the wife contracted gonorrhea from her husband after he returned from a business trip to Indonesia. So he was a bit of a rat. Giving your wife gonorrhea after, well, you know, no, that's pretty shonky stuff. However, the court upheld the husband's right to be involved in the lives of his two sons, you know, above the fact that he was in the wrong in that situation. And we here, dads in there, obviously think this is an important decision, and that fathers should, at all costs, be encouraged, and not only allowed, but encouraged, to remain in the lives of their children after divorce or separation or whatever.
Yes, I think there's a responsibility that goes with having children, and I'd like to see the court bending this way almost to so that it's it's the expected thing. It's really that you should stay in the vicinity so both parents can continue to see the child, rather than a presumption of going the other way, that the mother or the father or someone is entitled to move away for their own personal advancement or personal happiness, personal betterment, whatever. The main thing is it should always be focused on the child. And it just that the early part of that story talking about presumed that a happy mother equals to a happy child, I think it used to be summarised in a saying, happy wife, happy life. But I think the experience would indicate otherwise, that you can't put all your focus on trying to keep one of the parties happy and therefore hope that that will spread to the child. That the main thing is that the parents must stay in contact with the child.
Yes, children need both parents involved in their life, and it's numerous studies show that children do better when both the mother and the father are involved in their life, even if they are separated or divorced, that the children fare a lot better in terms of their schooling, in terms of all outcomes in later life, in terms of juvenile delinquency, drug abuse, prison sentencing, all of these areas, children tend to do better when both their mother and their father are involved in their life, and there seems to be very little dispute about that. Even the feminists can't really dispute that particular truth.
So that's a good news story, that if the court is in fact bending that way to encourage the parents to stay within striking distance of the child, both parents to be available to the child, that's got to be a positive thing. And I know the courts regard these, in the past they've always regarded them as the most difficult cases for some reason, because I think they're always trying to bend over backwards to allow one parent to move away. But
well, this society has for the last 30 years encouraged women, told them that they'd be happier and better off if they dump their husband. If they read Clio magazine, they're regularly told that they'll have more orgasms if they dump their husband, that they can party, take the children, have everything, and of course society helps that out, and poor old dad is denied access to the children and has to fork out a huge thwack of his salary to pay for mum's shenanigan and partying lifestyle, which is hopefully something that'll come to an end. Hopefully this ridiculous situation that we've had in this country and in most Western countries, where women are actually encouraged and financed by the government to destroy their families, and given everything as a reward for having done so. I mean, I don't know what the social engineering thinking behind all of this is. I mean, it's just really people, small picture people, I call them, who don't see the big picture. If you look at the big picture, there's no way that our society is in any way benefits from the plethora of divorces and separations that are taking place under our noses as we speak, Bill.
Yes, and this, like many of the topics we discuss on the show, is another controversial one. If you'd like to express your point of view, perhaps you've experienced something like this, a relocation, you can either contact us on www.dadsontheair.net, or even while we're on air, you can call us in the studio on 9822-98893. That's 9822-98893.
Yes, and there was an article published on March the 4th in The Telegraph in Britain. Single-parent families without a man in the house for three generations are creating a new underclass. A study has warned. This article was written by a woman, Laura Roberts. She goes on to write, "The research into extended families in Britain by the Centre for Policy Studies found that increasing numbers of single mothers are the product of single-parent families themselves. It concluded that the absence of male influence made this type of lone mother family more likely to rely on the welfare state as an indispensable prop and even lead to new class conflict. This male-free subculture revolves around caring for children and seems to involve little paid work by mothers or grandmothers, said the report. Such a development heralds the development of an underclass dependent for material support on the rest of society. Three-generation extended families without men have arrived. Figures show that there's a growing tendency for lone mothers to have daughters who go on to become lone mothers themselves. Well, it's learned behaviour, isn't it? They learn that from their mother. Obviously, this is, these families are parasitic. They don't contribute. They basically suck off other tax-paying families, and they are a problem, and they are a growing problem.
The problem is growing. In 1998, 44% of maternal grandmothers who were single mothers had daughters who were also lone parents. By 2008, that figure had grown from 44% to 53% of maternal grandmothers who had daughters who were like them, single mothers. I think we would expect this to go from generation to generation, because it's something like the studies of violence, where you'll find the violence will go from generation to generation. You'll find even broken homes will go from generation to generation.
What children grow up with, if that's how they see their parents living, then that's the behaviour that they are going to emulate.
It's one of the things they learn from their parents, unfortunately, and this has major impacts on society. If in fact we are encouraging through this the growth of single parent families, single mother families who are dependent on the state.
Well, there you go. Yes, so there it is. I mean, society's unravelling at the seams. Divorce, feminism, they are a cancer. So that's pretty well all that needs to be said. Okay, we'll go to a song, I believe. This is She Had off the General Electric.
Disregard. grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 9th day of March 2010. And it's Bill Cable from Mediate Now in the studio with Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com. And we're continuing with a couple of news stories. Ian, you've got another one there for us?
Yes, well, there's one here, Sydney Morning Herald, 8th of March, by Joel Gibson under the heading Attempt to Block Mummy D Fails. Joel Gibson writes, a woman has failed in her bid to have the family court stop her former partner from encouraging their six-year-old daughter to call her stepmother Mummy D. The mother applied for the unusual order in a South Australian case years after the parents separated within the first year of the child's life. She said encouraging the term of endearment was an incendiary action by her former partner and his new partner, even though it was followed by the initial of the stepmother's first name, and they had agreed not to encourage the simple use of mum or mummy. But Justice Christine Dorr refused to grant the order, saying it was impractical to require the father to stop encouraging the stepmother and the child to use the term Mummy D and could have led to further litigation. Weighing all the factors up, and particularly that the child was in the past had used the expression Mummy D, and on the basis that I am not satisfied from any of the material before the court that the use of the expression Mummy D by the stepmother would undermine the mother's relationship with the child, I am not satisfied that it is in the best interests of the child to grant the order, the judge said. So there you go. Common sense. Stepping into family court judgments. It's good to hear. I mean, you know, in these situations where, you know, I mean, second partners do cop it really badly. We've dealt with that issue here on Dad's on the Air in the past. You know, stepmothers. We've had we've interviewed various stepmothers. We had, what was her name, Dolla Merrilies, who wrote a book. My memory is deserting me here, but we've dealt with this issue, and it is a difficult, being a stepmother or indeed being a stepfather, you're taking on a difficult role. You will never be the mother. You will always be second best in the child's eyes. You represent the fact that their family is broken, and it is a difficult role for people to be in, and allowing the child to call you Mummy D or some similar affectionate term, I mean, is only going to be in the child's interests and stop confusion. What do you think, Bill?
Ian, this is going to keep it interesting, but I have to say I disagree completely with you on that point.
Go, Bill.
This is a something that came up, I suppose, in our interview last week with Dr. Ned Holstein when we were talking about parental alienation. And one of the regular factors, I mean, whether you believe parental alienation is a syndrome or whether it's not a syndrome.
Well, I do. No, I accept parental alienation syndrome, absolutely, 100%.
So, and there are a lot of common things that happen when parental alienation is involved. And one of the most regular events that happens following the separation when the parental alienation starts is that the new partner is called Daddy or Mummy. And I would recommend to any alienated parents that they try and get put in the orders that there is no, that the new partner is not to be called daddy, father, any derivation of those words, and likewise for the mother, that the mother is not to be, the new mother is not to be called mother, mummy, or any derivation of those words, because
okay, but what would you recommend that they do call them? Because obviously it's in the child's interest to bond with the parents' new partner. I mean, you know, if they're living in the same house under the same roof, you know, then it's in the child's interest to have a good relationship, and obviously they have to address this person as something. What would you suggest?
I don't see any reason why they can't call them by their name. I mean, in fact, it's a growing tendency now for parents to be called by their first name. But I certainly think that mummy, daddy, mother, father, and all those derivatives should be reserved for the biological parent. And,
yeah, no, that's a good point, and I take that point.
Yeah, it might be a minor issue in some people's eyes, but it's when it's added to the all the other factors that go towards parental alienation, the moving away from where the family used to live, the denigration of the other parent, actually frequently the changing of name of the child, so that the child's name is changed to the new partner's name. There are so many things that you see case after case, and certainly calling the new partner mummy or daddy or one of those type names is one of the ones you see most frequently. So I think in this case, probably like so many people in this country, as we were talking about last week with Dr. Ned Holstein, there are so many people in Australia who don't want to understand parental alienation, or if they do know something about it, they want to deny it exists or get caught up on the argument as to whether it's a syndrome or it's not a syndrome. And of course, much of this would be resolved if we could get the parental alienation syndrome included in the American Bible of psychiatric
disorders,
illnesses.
Yes,
yes, the DSM-5. So that's a campaign that's being running in America, and if we can get that, if it is successfully included in the DSM-5, well then we won't be having to have these arguments, because hopefully the magistrates and judges will start to become aware of parental alienation and all its forms and the way it's expressed in all these different ways. So,
yeah, I think I take your point, but I think in cases where there's nothing else that suggests parental alienation. You know, Mummy D, he hasn't encouraged the child to refer to the new partner as just Mummy, to like substitute for the biological mother. There is a differentiation. It's Mummy D. So it's like, this person is fulfilling the role of mother in the household. And personally, I don't think that children referring to, a carer by their first name is respectful. I know there's a lot of that going on, but I mean, I have friends and their children refer to me as Mr. Ian, which is my first name is Ian, obviously. I don't want them to call me Mr. Purdy. I mean, I'm not their uncle, and they call me Mr. Ian, which I consider to be respectful rather than them just referring to me as Ian. And I know that my friend doesn't like my son referring to him by his first name. He prefers to be called, I'll use his name, Mr. Wayne, because that is a more respectful title from a child to address an adult than just calling them by their first name. So there's a bit of a grey area here.
Yes, well, it often comes down to the intent and where the alienating parent is encouraging this use of the other name. That's when it really must be resisted.
Oh, look, I agree, and I definitely agree that parental alienation syndrome is alive and well, and it is a syndrome, and it is something that that children need to be protected against. It's a form of child abuse.
I can tell
clearly.
Tell you it is one of the biggest kicks in the guts when you find your child calling someone else daddy.
Yeah, no, I can understand
that. And then what goes with it oftentimes is, you start being called by your first name and the new partner is called daddy. That's when you really know there's alienation going on.
Yeah. I think you'd have to maybe Daddy John or Daddy P or something. I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Well, we've uncovered a bit of a grey area. I take your point, and it is a good point. And I don't think we're going to resolve it here on this program today. There is an issue here. So you would think that this judgment where the stepmother is allowed to be referred to as Mummy D is incorrect.
I do, and I think it's another case of a magistrate not understanding, not knowing, not inquiring about parental alienation, and not being prepared to take the relevant action. But there are other judgments where I know for a fact that there are orders made that the new partner will not be called by any of those names or derivatives.
And, well, I agree that they shouldn't be called mummy or daddy, simply that term, because that is a term that should be reserved exclusively for the biological parent. You know, and even in cases where the biological parent is dead or in jail or simply just not around at all, I don't think children should be encouraged to substitute the new partner who may be one of a procession of new partners. We've got to take that into account, that relationship is not as stable as the biological relationship, because you only have one father and you only have one mother. Only biologically you cannot substitute another person. But it's a difficult area because I think you're wanting the child to bond with the new person in their parents' life, who is living, if they're living under the same roof, and I think you need it to be done in a respectful way. But I mean, this is just another one of the quandaries that the whole divorce syndrome throws up, where we have all these huge grey areas, where appropriate behaviour, where the, you know, the old ways of relating simply do not apply anymore, and we're basically we're on new ground here in terms of what is appropriate, what is in the best interest of the child, what is in the best interests of the parents, you know, and what is basically workable, you know. We're in a grey area.
Yes, I suppose, you know, one way of distinguishing this is if the name actually comes from the child, although of course it's very hard to ever find that out. But, as I say, when it's part of a parental alienation, it's definitely a no-no, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, but I've also noticed, especially with little girls, that there is a tendency for them to want to bond with the new man, you know, in mummy's life. And I've, you know, often to what I consider to be a distressing extent, that they really just do want to have a father figure, and that they are willing, you know, to go to great lengths to bond with the new man who may be temporary, you know, might even just be a one night stand. Mummy wakes up with somebody new and, oh, hello, daddy. You know, I mean, this obviously is inappropriate, and should not be encouraged, but, yeah, well, like you say, if the child, if it is a long-term stable relationship with a step-parent, the child needs to have some means of addressing the step-parent, which is respectful and doesn't denigrate the other biological parent in any way, and doesn't lead to situations where parental alienation syndrome can come into play. I agree with that entirely, that parental alienation syndrome is child abuse. And completely and utterly, you know, you'd open and shut. Anyway,
so that's one we'll continue to discuss. I think the whole area of parental alienation is a very important one, and as I say, there is work being done, and in the States in particular, and we'd like to see it extended to Australia, so there's a much better understanding of the whole process. And now we're going to have a music break before we have our first guest today. And this is a song we played last week. There was a bit of interest generated. It's a song by Rebecca Barrett called Intoxicated, written by her father, Vince.
Toxic.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1-300-853-437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air. And we have our first guest this morning from the Fatherhood Foundation, Dads for Kids. It's Warwick Marsh. Are you there, Warwick? Warwick, are you there?
Indeed, and sorry about that last muck-up. That was my fault, so apologise.
No problem. Technical hitch. Now, Warwick, we just wanted to speak to you. You've arranged a meeting at Parliament House in Sydney on Friday, and I think it's going to be the intention of the meeting is to talk about the rollback of the legislation. I was just wondering if you could, or the proposed rollback of the legislation, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, look, I appreciate your question, Bill, and it's really great to be back on Dads in the Air. And before I go any further, I just want to say thank you for your work on behalf of fathers and for men generally. We just don't have a voice really in the community. I think it's 49.3% of the whole community is men, but if for some strange reason we seem to be invisible. And I think it's part of a sort of sacrificial nature of men to accept that and just get on with the job. But it doesn't do us any good in government policy because from a government point of view we are invisible. And this classic case in point, of course, is this proposed rollback of shared parenting. Now, the government will, when you ask them, they'll say, we don't have any intention to roll back shared parenting. I was actually down with a delegation, a marriage delegation of people who are passionate to see marriage restored in this country and renewed. And certainly we absolutely against any proposed redefinition of marriage. And I went down with the delegation, and because I'm pretty passionate about fatherhood issues, and I see these as sort of central issues anyway, we actually had a young lady who spoke to both the Attorney General and the Shadow Attorney General, and in her speech, she raised the issue off the rollback of shared parenting. And Mr. McClellan said that he didn't have an intention of rolling back shared parenting, and Mr. Brandis said that he, in fact, had absolutely no intention. In fact, they wanted to make sure they strengthened it. So that the receptivity from the coalition was very positive.
So that sounds, that sounded like bipartisan support for not rolling it back.
Well, yes, but see, that's the theory of it. The reality of it is that they're actually rolling it back as we speak because they're letting the courts redefine what was meant to be shared parenting. And, of course, it wasn't meant to be, the starting point was meant to be a 50-50 idea where both sides had this possibility that they could actually share parenting after a marriage breakdown or a separation. They could actually share the parenting. Now, what's just happened in a very recent court decision, I think only about 2 weeks ago, was that the court virtually rejected this. And so what's happening is the shared parenting rollback is now occurring through redefinition through the family court, which I believe is supported by the Attorney General's Department. And, of course, it's supported by the Diana Bryant, who's the Chief Justice of the Family Law Court, has become quite partisan in her approach in the sense that she is advocating for the Parliament to change the shared parenting laws. And I find that quite reprehensible because she is meant to actually enact the laws,
yes.
Not to change the laws, but to enact them. And, of course, we are meant to, the Parliament is meant to change the laws. So, look, I do believe there's a shared parenting rollback in process, whether it's said or not. And, of course, there's an election coming up in 6 months' time. I think Mr. McClellan got his hands wrapped by the Prime Minister for bringing this up. But he did bring it up. And, of course, on the day before the anniversary of young Darcy Freeman, and, of course, all hands go up in mock horror because the father threw this little girl over the over the bridge, which of course was an absolute shocking tragedy, but there was only just 6 months before that, Oliver Garcia was virtually thrown over the bridge by a woman who strapped this little baby to herself and just jumped off the bridge. And so she killed her own son. So, look, there's no point in politicising these deaths. They're terrible. They're reprehensible. Both situations are terrible. So why should he lift up one against the other?
Well, it's extraordinary. These things can get a life.
We've got to get rid of the gender war, and we've got to move forward and get past that.
Yes.
We've got to find solutions for children to be able to spend time with both parents.
Yes, these things can get a life of their own. I'm reminded of the White Ribbon movement, which grew out of a massacre, I suppose, in Canada, but it then has now spread all around the world as being focused on violence against women, let alone, you know, ignoring all the other types of violence in the world against children and men and
animals, even.
Even animals. But, as I say, these things get a life of their own. So this meeting that you're proposing on Friday, that's to sort of galvanise some people together to fight this surreptitious rollback, I suppose, is it?
Well, yes. And just to be fair, by the way, Tony Miller is the one that's actually calling the meeting. He just asked for my assistance, and because I guess I've done a lot of this sort of thing, working with different men's groups and fatherhood groups and bringing people together from fairly diverse backgrounds, Tony's enlisted my support. But look, Tony, this meeting is actually coming from Tony, and I said, look, Tony, I'm happy to help you in this, and look, I'm looking forward to the fact that we might get some cooperation and we might develop some strategies to go forward. Unfortunately, the Labor government has really let men down a number of levels. We were, you know, part in the lead up to the last election, we were announced that we were going to get a men's health policy. And we were all excited about that, and I think a lot of men voted for the Labor government on the basis that would happen. And we felt that the Labor government was actually listening to us, and I think the Liberal Party at that stage had stopped listening to us, and of course they'd stopped listening to the Australian people in a lot of different ways. But the reality is that in 2.5 years, 2.5 years later, we still don't have a men's health policy. I mean, you could write a men's health policy in 2 weeks. You don't have to spend 2.5 years writing a men's health policy. It's disgusting to wait. And, you know, there's some deep concern out there about what will be included and what not will be included. And, I mean, that's just one thing. When we had the summit there, they had that big summit in Canberra to move forward and to consult with the Australian people. They ignored leaders from the men's and fathers' movement. And, of course, women, you know, the feminist movement were not ignored, and they were there in force. But where were the men and fathers?
No, well, that's right. Leaders? Good morning, Warwick. Ian Purdy here. We actually, all of us here at Dad's on the Air applied to be part of that meeting, and we all got knocked back. So, that's absolutely correct what you're saying there. They definitely ignored the father's movement, and yourself and many other people who applied to go to that. We were all knocked back, and of course, there were lots of representatives from women's groups and feminist organisations. So, that is true. They ignored us.
Yeah. And look, I think you would agree, and it's only right to have, if you're going to have a summit to work on the country and to look at the future, the best way forward, it's right to invite women's groups. There was nothing wrong with that. But, of course, the omission, the glaring omission, and in fact, you know, as you pointed out, I think 17 of us applied.
Yep.
17 of us applied to go, and they're all credible involved community leaders, going to happy to go down there on their own time.
Yes.
And all of us were knocked back. I thought that was quite disgusting, didn't you?
Yeah, no, we thought at least one of us, you know, John Stapleton, somebody, you know, are people who are recognised national figures representing men's issues. I mean, you'd think at least one of us would have got, you know, the thumbs up, but no, they knocked the whole lot of us back.
You can make that 18, I was knocked back as well.
Well, there you go. Brothers in rejection. Here we are, all of us.
Well, you know something, we're not going to, this is an election coming up, and I think that the men's movement more than ever is out there, and I think more people know about men's issues. And I say let the best party win, you know. Let's see if Mr. Abbott's prepared to actually listen to us this time and take note. Now, a bit of good news for you is that Well, we did apply to see the... we saw both the Attorney-General and the Shadow Attorney-General. We saw Anthony Byrne, who's been a big advocate on the Labor side for men's issues. In fact, probably one of the most outstanding in all of the Labor Party for men's issues and fatherhood issues. And so he occupies the position of Parliamentary Secretary to the Prime Minister. He saw us, which is very good. We saw a couple other Liberal guys, but Coalition guys as well. But what was interesting was that we made application to see the Prime Minister. We made application to see the opposition leader. The Prime Minister was obviously very busy. He couldn't see us, but, you know, to the opposition leader's credit, Tony Abbott gave us time. And he came and met with a 49-member delegation, and he shook all our hands, and he came in and listened to Judy Limbers share her presentation. And, of course, she brought up the whole issue of shared parenting, and he certainly heard it. He didn't make too many comments about these things, but he certainly listened. And I think we can honestly say that we've got someone who's prepared to listen as the opposition leader. I don't believe we had that in the last two opposition leaders. And I think that those guys are fairly turned off to the whole issue of men and fathers' issues. But Tony has been to one of our other forums down there back in 2008, March 2008. I think some of the guys from Dad's On Air was down there. Greg Anderson was down there. And, of course, he came along and he talked about the need for implementation of the men's health policy, not just a policy, but let's have some implementation, which I thought was very, very good.
Yes, it doesn't help us now, but I think Malcolm Turnbull was relatively father-friendly as well. But the Labor Party, we're hard-pressed to find too many people supporting the men in these situations, I think. I'm just thinking back to that conference, the men's health conference that you organised in Canberra. I think we only managed to get one Labor representative to drop in the whole day, whereas we had a number of coalition members coming in.
Yeah, look, it was actually pretty sad. It was very sad, wasn't it? We worked hard to invite some of our Labor friends. I think Anthony Byrne, the Parliamentary Secretary to the Prime Minister, was invited, and he said he was going to come along, and then I think he got caught away at the last moment. I mean, generally speaking, the guys in the government, to be fair, are often pretty busy, and the guys in the opposition tend to have a little bit more time on their hands, so we've got to be fair in that regard. But that was actually, I thought, was pretty disastrous in the sense that we did have Peter Costello came along, we had several other key people within the coalition, and the Labor Party just, didn't seem to want to know us. And I just think it's very sad, isn't it? It's very sad. And I'm just hoping that indeed either Labor or Liberal will start to realise that 49.3%, whatever it is, of the electorate are men, and that men do have issues, and that men do need to have a voice, and that men will vote at the next election.
Yes, well, maybe it's time to put a plug in for the Labor member who did come and see us, and that was John Murphy. And I think John's generally given more of a supportive ear to men than perhaps a lot of his colleagues.
And I think John actually is a bit of a friend of yours. Is that right, Bill?
He is. He's an old school friend. We go back a long way, and so I do have a bit of an in with John, and he's a very nice bloke. So, but if more people can direct some attention to John, they might have a chance of getting somewhere.
Look, John, in my experience, John is a man of honour, and it's very sad to know that this is his last term in Parliament. He's a man of honour and he's a man of heart, and yes, he's been a supporter of these issues in the past. But certainly we need to see some more support from some of our Labor friends. And but I, as I always say, let the best party win. If the opposition wakes up to itself and realises there is indeed a men's vote out there, which I believe there is.
Well, absolutely, well, there is.
Might receive it, mightn't they?
Well, yes. do you see it as a bit of a double-edged sword, this getting funding? And at the moment, we know women's organisations have something over 20 million. Men, very few of the organisations are funded. I think DIDS has got something recently, but there is always the danger then that if you're getting funding that you have to toe the government line, I suppose, isn't there?
Well, I guess it's one of the problems with funding. I do believe the government needs to fund men's organisations that are helping men that are actually at the workplace and have credibility, because there's a lot of men's, well, there's a few men's organisations that are getting funding from the government, but I don't believe they are as connected to the real issues and as connected to the workplace as they would purport. The reality is that Dads in Distress have been doing a sterling job, and Lone Fathers have been an incredible job, and I think the Shared Parenting Council has been doing a great job helping people, helping men in need, especially in separation issues. And all three have virtually been cut off from further government funding or, you know, disregarded in this regard. So, look, there is a problem with government funding because it tends to muzzle you. We are not seeking government funding because we want to be able to stay open and to be able to criticise a government, whether it's a Labor government or a Liberal government. Obviously, we're not. We want to be positive as we can. We're not just looking to criticise. We're looking to find when they do something good to honour them and to appreciate them. But lately, it's been pretty bad news for men and fathers across Australia with this current Rudd government.
Now, the Fatherhood Foundation, how many years have you had that going, Warwick?
We started in 2002. My wife and I felt there was a real need to encourage dads. And when we started, we weren't aware, to be frank with you, of how deep the problems are, especially with single dads. I've been happily married now for 34 years. My wife has put up with me. She should receive a gold medal for that, I'm sure.
She's happy in the service. Yeah, I have it direct from the horse's mouth on that one.
Pardon?
She's happy in the service. I've heard directly from Alison on that one.
We've got five children from, 17 to 27, 28. And, the bottom line is that we've got, we're committed to family. And but I'm really committed to seeing fathers become great fathers. That's the foundational purpose of the Dads for Kids Fatherhood Foundation. Our dream is to see Australian dads become the best dads in the world. And if we can do that, we can reverse the trend of fatherlessness and start to reduce the prison population, start to reduce the drug toll, start to reduce the youth suicide rate, to start to reduce further more breakups in families. Because when we get strong men, we get strong fathers. When we get strong fathers, we get strong families. We have strong families, we have a strong nation. So, look, that's our passion. But one of these issues, of course, is the incredible inequities of funding within government circles, and, of course, the inequities that still single fathers are facing in the courts. And it looks like that the small changes, and I'll use that word again, very small changes, I thought they're very, very moderate changes. I would have liked to have seen a lot better and more comprehensive changes in 2006. But even those small changes are about to be rolled back should the Labor government get back into power. That's my estimation. And the other reality, of course, is that even what happened, whatever happens right now, those changes have been eroded by a very, very pernicious family law court campaign, which is in effect rolling them back and redefining them. And I'm very deeply concerned. And the whole issue, as you brought up before, you talked about 20 million of funding for women's issues. Well, look, the reality, of course, is that women, on a number of different levels of health and a whole bunch of other funding areas, are getting, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And in comparison to men, it's probably like 100 to 1 or 200 to 1 or 1,000 to 1. Look, we understand that women do need care, and that there's probably issues in health that they maybe need more funding for than men, that it certainly shouldn't be 1,000 to 1 or 100 to 1. It should be much more equitable than that. And of course, that's one of the issues that I think Tony's very concerned about in this Friday meeting.
Yes, and you're bringing to the attention of the government that this does flow through to all those other areas. I mean, we're not just talking about family law. It flows through to youth suicide. It flows through to homelessness. It flows through to people in the workforce. It's so comprehensive that you could almost point to any issue and say there might be a link back to this, the lack of a father in the family.
Look, yeah, the whole issue of fatherlessness, the Rudd government, and to its credit, the Rudd government has actually tried to tackle some of the issues of homelessness, and they poured, as I understand, hundreds of millions of dollars into this issue. But you see, when you actually unpack the statistics, you find that I think 70 to 80% of people who are homeless are also fatherless. And you'll also find a statistic, too, that 70, 80% of people that are homeless come from broken homes. Now, what's the answer? Well, the answer is to to actually encourage marriage, support marriage, because that's the best way to protect children. When you have de facto relationships, it's 10 times more likely to break up by the 16th birthday compared with a marriage. That's just the recent statistics that come out of the UK. So indeed, we've got to find a way to repair marriage, but we've also got to find a way to encourage men and support men in marriage, A, and B, should there be divorce, should there be a separation, let's make it equitable, let's make it at least a level playing field. And of course, there won't be so many fatherless children on the streets, will there? There won't be so many hundreds of millions of dollars to have to be poured into a band-aid solution for a problem that actually is much more to do with fatherlessness and family breakdown.
Yes, and we've been talking with Warwick Marshall. Warwick, I wonder if you could just give your website for our listeners.
Look, it's very kind of you to mention that, because I often forget to do that. We've got, it's probably the best resource, if I do say so myself, for fathers in Australia. We've got a lot of research, we've got a lot of articles, and it's on fatherhood.org.au. And, you know, we've got a lot of links there as well for the other fatherhood groups in Australia. And, of course, the thing I really like to let people know about, we've got a weekly email that goes out to dads all over Australia. And if you want to log on to that weekly email, just go to fatherhood.org.au, and subscribe yourself. And at least you can stay in the know of what's happening in fatherhood issues in Australia. It's the longest-running weekly email, bar none, in Australia. It's a bit like the Dads on Air radio program, which I think started in 2000. And it's been going now for 10 years. Is that right, Ian?
Yes, we're the longest-running men's issues radio program in the world, Warwick. So, yeah, we're doing well. They haven't kicked us out yet.
Yeah, you guys have done a great job. That's 10 years now and still going every week. And
yep.
The same with our weekly email. We've been going every week now since 2002. There's been an article every week, a newsletter, which has got a lot of stuff about marriage, relationships, latest news, single dads, grandfathers, thought for the week, a bit of humour, and that comes into Dads Who Subscribe inbox every Sunday morning. It lobs in there, and it's there to encourage dads, and we're proud to say it's definitely the longest running email in Australia, and we would argue perhaps alongside you guys that it's the biggest longest running weekly email for dads in the world, because it's quite a it's got quite a lot of resources in it. So look, there's some great stuff that comes out from America, but of course that is American, and this is Australian. And so, like Dads on Air, which has done a great job for Aussie dads, we hope we can follow in your footsteps.
Well, Warwick, we're all working together, Warwick, and you're doing great work. And it's great having great. Basically, it's good working with you. We're working towards the same ends, and we've been at it for a long time, and hopefully we will eventually triumph.
So thanks again, Warwick. It's always entertaining speaking to you and to get all that great information and updates. So all strength to your foundation, and we'll look forward to talking to you again on not before too long. Thanks, Warwick.
And I'm certainly hoping, Bill, you can come represent Dads on Air on Friday. Any chance of that?
I'll be there.
Yeah, hopefully I might be there as well. We're actually going to work something out, but we'll definitely have somebody represented there, and hopefully we'll be recording people's views and we'll be putting them to air over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks again, Warwick.
That'll be good. It's interesting enough, as a filmmaker who wants Express to come along and wants to do a documentary, so it'd be good if you guys were there, because he needs to tell your story as much as anyone else's story, and the Dads on Air story is a success story. So, listen, guys, again, thanks for your support, thanks for your time, and keep up your great work, and God bless you all.
Thanks very much,
Warwick. Thank you, Warwick.
so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air this Tuesday, the 9th of March, 2010. Our next guest is Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency. Sue has been running a number of campaigns recently. There's a postcard campaign to go to politicians, let them know what we think as we're coming into an election year. There's a forum which we've just been speaking to Warwick Marsh about, that's going to be held this Friday, to get some participation from various people supporting men's rights in the community, and Men's Rights Agency is supporting that. Men's Rights have been issuing a number of press releases to highlight the status quo and ongoing problems. So we should speak directly to Sue. Are you there, Sue?
I am here at long last. We've got a power failure in Queensland, or in our part of Queensland.
Oh, so you're flooded out, I suppose, are you?
Well, I don't know whether it's the floods. We'll be swimming next, I think. But no, we're high and dry here, but there's no power. So we've managed to connect a phone up.
Oh, you've hooked up the generator, and that's good news.
Well, that's Queensland for you, so not always perfect. Not bad, but not always perfect.
Rather, was it perfect?
Beautiful one day, perfect the next, yeah. Is what
almost,
I heard, but anyway.
Well, Sue, I know you've been very busy lately with this, with the number of campaigns. I was just wondering if you could give us an update on how things are travelling.
Look, we're getting much better response now, which I'm pleased to say. We've got a postcard protest campaign on the go, which is trying to change the opinions that some people have about domestic violence. They've been instructed over the years that the only violence that ever occurs is violence by men against women, and that's not true. There's numerous international and local studies that show that domestic violence is pretty much an equal opportunity activity, and unfortunately, and men in Australia, of the victims of domestic violence, men make up a third of those victims. So it's fairly high levels. But, of course, the government gives $42 million towards preventing domestic violence against women and children, but they give something like $3.2 million, I think it was, to Men's Line, and that's about all that is given. So it really is. We've got a big disparity in what's going on, and there is a great reluctance by the government to admit or to acknowledge that men are victims of domestic violence. So that's part of our campaign. That's one of the postcards. The other postcard is about child abuse, and unfortunately, and sadly, I say this, and probably surprisingly to many people, mothers do make up the greatest threat to our children. They kill more children and they abuse more children. So, you know, we've got a real problem there, because the trouble is that most of the authorities, family court, the legislators, are all led to believe that it's the men who present the greatest risk to children, and that's just not true. So those are the first two problems that we've been trying to overcome, is that, you know, let's get the facts straight. Yes, we want children to be protected in family law. We don't want shared parenting to be rolled back, because there is absolutely no justification to do so on the claim that, you know, the family court is giving children to violent fathers. You know, there are some violent fathers, there are more violent mothers, sadly. But, you know, we don't change the law because of those things.
No, it always seems that the fathers have to justify that they're the perfect father before they'll be even considered for getting some time with their children, whereas the mothers, it seems to be a given.
Absolutely. The fathers have to be absolutely perfect. They have to, you know, no drugs, no alcohol, nothing. But
definitely no violence, of course.
A mother, of course, no violence. Well, that goes without saying. But the a mother can be working for in the game, so to speak. They can be using drugs. Their boyfriends can be using drugs. They can be alcoholics. They can be, you know, we had one picked up the other day with her children in the car, and I think she was three times over the limit, something like that. And this goes on regularly. We hear these reports all the time. But what is really scary is the number of times we're hearing now where there is absolutely no contact given to fathers because the mother is objecting so strongly to the father having contact for no good reason, except her own paranoia. But the family court is actually pandering to these women. They have the problem that they can't accept that their child should have a relationship with the father. So the family court panders to the women and says, all right, we'll say no contact to the father in the hope that that'll make the mother happier. The mother, being a happy mother, will then be a good mother. It doesn't work that way.
No, yeah, that was mentioned earlier too. The happy wife, happy life doesn't necessarily follow, but there are also the differences, I suppose, between the states. Now, I'm aware that in Canberra, even when there is demonstrated domestic violence from the mother, the local equivalent of DOCS takes the view that if one parent is willing and able, they're not going to take the child away from that parent, which seems extraordinary. But that's a situation I know about at the moment, where the mother is demonstrated and even acknowledged by the local equivalent of DOCS that she is violent.
Yeah, and they're not going to do anything about that.
No, and it seems like in court the judges they're very reluctant to make a hard decision. If they can't get agreement between the parties, they'd prefer to just let things ride. It's very hard to, and then, you know, as you were saying before, there's this sort of stereotype in the community of what the women and what the mothers are like, and how on earth do you get on top of it?
Well, it can only be a matter of education. They've spent 30 years demonising men over over domestic violence without recognising, even though they have known about the fact that men are victims of domestic violence. They have not allowed that information out. They've hidden it deliberately, quite deliberately. They do the same with child abuse and homicide statistics on child murder. And if they're going to continue to do this, it is basically extremely dishonest, and it is not helping or protecting the children that need protection. So you know, we have a double whammy with it, and it's a huge thing to overcome. The third card that we're sending out, the postcard, that these are all going out to politicians and to both in the lower house and in the Senate. We want people to subscribe to it so that they can put their name on the card, so that the politician actually has to respond to them, as is the requirement of their position. The third card is talking about shared care, and it's part of an article from a journalist called Stephanie Ramage, and she was she separated from her husband. She had a young son, and she was offered a very good job in another state. She comes from Georgia, and she decided against taking the other job because she knew it would deprive her son of his father, and she didn't want to do that. And she was quite shocked by the attitude of some of the other mothers in the way that they had to justify all these all their bad behavior virtually by allegations, false allegations of domestic violence and child abuse, this type of thing.
Yes, I almost think there should be a presumption that you do stay around so that the child can know both parents, rather than, it's a right to go off and pursue your own dream somehow and forget about what the child just has to sort of adjust to it.
Well, I think what we need to be looking at is the absolute presumption that when parents separate that the children should be in shared care. There should be no doubt about that. And that only needs to be moderated according to the practicalities of the situation. But it's more, it's not even the actual, it's actually, it's the, It's the realization that even as a father, if you work away, you are still regarded as being essential and thoroughly important in that child's life. Mm. So even though you might not be able to see your child for 50% of the time, you have absolutely a right to be there and be in that child's life, which of course is denied.
Mm.
We don't have that anymore. You know, we focus purely on the rights of the child, and that's not a wrong thing to do, but we have to consider the rights of other people involved as well, and that's involving both parents.
Well, yeah, I mean, the rights of the child to see their father. I mean, surely...
Of course, and also the father and the mother have rights as well,
yeah,
which are denied at the moment. Well, they're denied in principle in the legislation, but they're not denied in practicality when it comes to court, because the courts bend over backwards to protect the mother and to make sure that she's cared for and her demands are acceded to. And that's where we have a problem.
So how is the postcard campaign going at the moment?
It's good, but we're still looking for more people from Northern Territory, Tasmania, South Australia and Western Australia. A bit quiet over there from that point of view, but if there are any people who are from those states, we'd certainly love to hear from you. We've still got plenty of cards to go out. We can either send the cards to you, or you can send us a small contribution to cover the postage and we'll write the cards for you. It's very simple, very easy. Then just go to our website and log on.
And we're talking with Sue Price from Men's Rights Agency. Sue, could you just remind us all of the website address?
Yeah, www.mensrights.com.au.
And you'll find a lot of other information there as well.
Yeah, we've still got the other study survey still going on the voting intention. If Labor roll back the shared parenting, as they're threatening to do. And I have to say that the interim findings are almost unanimously against Labor, that people will not be voting for Labor. Even though they voted for Labor the last time, they've changed their mind.
So we need to get that message across to the Labor parliamentarians, I guess.
Well, that's a message that we will be getting across. I'll be taking some of those first statistics and about the attitudes of people to the client satisfaction level with family relationship centres. That's the third survey that we've got running. And I'll be taking some of those that information with me on Friday. There's a meeting in Canberra at Parliament House amongst some of the men's and fathers groups to settle on some future campaigns to counter the misinformation that's been provided to politicians and the legislators.
Yes, we've just been talking to Warwick Marsh about that exact subject. And,
oh, have you right?
Yes, Dad's on the Air will be there. And
But Sue, there's just one thing we need to check. You mentioned Canberra. I'm just looking at an invitation here, and it says it's Parliament House Sydney in the Parks Room.
Are you joking?
No, it's Sydney, definitely.
I'm
we just spoke to Warwick.
I'm going to the wrong
place then. Yeah, no, don't go to Canberra.
I'm going to change my flight.
You'll have to.
Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, so I had a horrible vision of you turning up in Canberra.
Canberra. Nobody there.
Look, we have been so frantically busy this last few weeks, and it's amazing I'm still here in Bethania where we live. That's all right. I'll fix that immediately. I do thank you for letting me know.
No, you're welcome, Lee. We definitely need you to be there.
Yeah, well,
very important.
Nobody responded. I did send an email that I'd be arriving in Canberra, so nobody responded to that. So,
oh, dear.
No, well, it's in the... imagine visions of me being there.
9 a.m., the Parks Room at Parliament House here in Sydney, New South Wales.
You can
Wales.
Tell I'm not a Sydney-sider, can't you?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's not
that's
such
great.
A bad thing.
No. That's good. Thank you very much indeed.
No, well, thank you, Sue. Thanks for coming on once again. We have actually had talk of renaming Dad's on the Air the Sue Price Show because you are our star. But, no, thank you for your contribution. It's always appreciated. And I guess we'll see you on Friday.
At least we can have a laugh about it.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks. I'll see you on Friday.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks for coming on, Sue.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Daddy's not home. We're all alone. The tide's coming in, and the lights have just blown. Daddy's not home. It's a tragedy. And Mommy just tells us to keep watching.
watching TV.
With Dad's on the Air. Just following on with something mentioned with our last guest, Sue Price from the Men's Rights Agency, she mentioned at one stage the 1 in 3 figure. There is a very good website, 1 in 3. If you type either the words or the figures into your Google search engine, you will come up with this site. It's a site put together by our own Greg Andresen, and there you will find the accurate figures on domestic violence rather than the nonsense that's being peddled by various people with vested interests. And you will find, for instance, that that young males and females aged 12 to 20 were equally likely to have experienced domestic violence or forced sex by a partner. Now, that's not something that we often hear. Young people were just as likely to have seen mum hit dad as they were to have seen dad hit mum. 25% of young people agreed with the statement, when a girl hits a guy, it's really not a big deal, while males hitting females was seen by virtually all young people surveyed to be unacceptable. So it appears to be quite acceptable for a girl to hit a boy. That's something, one of these stereotypes that we have to get rid of. What was another figure here? 21% of physical violence between dating partners of university age during 2005-2006 in Australia were perpetrated by females only. That's 21%. 14% by males only. And 64.9% was mutual violence, where both parties used violence against each other. And I think
of course only the blokes get charged.
Yeah, but that's the experience all around the world, that where you find violence in a domestic situation, it's almost, well, there you are, 64.9% of the time it is mutual violence. And in fact, when you look at those other figures, there are more females involved on their own than there are males. Somewhat surprising when you think of all the various campaigns, the White Ribbon campaigns and all these other sources.
Basically male vilification campaigns.
Yes, it is, I think. It's now the government has just announced federal funding for a $9.3 million to respectful relationship programs, is what they call it. But University of Western Sydney researcher Michael Woods has noted that there's a focus upon gender as the cause of relationship violence and abuse, rather than the internationally accepted evidence that other causes play a much larger part. Those other causes include social disadvantage, drug and alcohol abuse, mental health issues, and inadequate conflict management that affect regulation skills. Now, these are the areas we should be focusing, not just a simplistic campaign to say it's all in the gender, all in the sex, that it's the problem is being a boy, and that's something we've got to fight against.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Bill, I think we've pulled it off for another week. You can listen to this show on our website, dadsontheair.net. It should be up either this afternoon or sometime tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Yes, and stay tuned for Country Bob.
Country Bob. I don't know why he calls himself Country Bob. He's not a country. He's not even really any bigger than me. I don't know why he thinks he's a country old Bob. But anyway, Country Bob will be on after 12. So stay tuned.
See you all next week.
We're dads on the air. We're here 'cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.